Hi, and welcome to the Arizona Daily Sun. I'm Megan Warren. Tonight we'll be reading from Arizona Daily Sun, dated March 25th, 2020. We'll start with the front page news. First, county reports first COVID-19 death by Daily Sun staff. Coconino County Health and Human Services confirmed the first COVID-19 related death in Coconino County Tuesday evening, a male in his 50s with underlying health conditions. The health department is working to identify and contact anyone who may have been in close contact with the decedent. The individuals will be asked to quarantine or isolate as necessary and will be monitored by public health for fever and respiratory symptoms. To date, there have been 18 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Coconino County. COVID-19 can be a serious disease, especially in elderly populations and people with underlying health conditions. Our thoughts are with the family during this difficult time, Marie Peoples, County Incident Commander and Deputy County Manager, said in a statement. We share in this family's grief and are deeply committed to doing all we can to ensure the health and safety of our community. We urge everyone to take precautions to protect themselves and their family, including washing their hands frequently, staying home when they are sick, and contacting a healthcare provider for medical guidance. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, older adults, pregnant women, and people who have underlying medical conditions such as HIV or asthma may be at higher risk for serious complications from COVID-19. People have to be very vigilant, said County Spokesman Matthew Rudick. They need to stay home, wash their hands frequently, and do whatever they can, especially if they have underlying health conditions, are in one of those vulnerable populations, or are around older people. As of Monday evening, there were 18 confirmed cases in the county. In a live Facebook video update Tuesday, Supervisor Jim Park broke down the cases by age, 8 individuals in the 40 to 60-year-old range, 7 who are 65 and older, and 3 in all other age groups. He also noted 9 cases are in Flagstaff, 6 in Page, and the remaining 3 in other areas of the county. Sunday, the county announced the first signs of community transmission of COVID-19, which happens when confirmed cases cannot be traced back to an exposure like travel or contact with a known confirmed case. With community transmission, we know that it's just here in our community, and it's in neighboring communities and across the nation. So people need to assume they have been exposed or that at some point in time, they will most likely be exposed, people said Monday in a video update, explaining the need for precautions like hand washing. CCHHS urged people to continue to take the following precautionary measures. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. If soap and water are not available, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, mouth with unwashed hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue, then immediately throw the tissue in the trash. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects and surfaces. For more information about COVID-19, please visit www.az.gov/COVID-19 or email COVID-19information@coconino.az.gov. And that was Coconino County reports first death from COVID-19. The next article, family of Flagstaff's 6-year-old boy pleads not guilty to death in nearly empty courtroom, by Scott Buffin, Sun staff reporter. Judge Kathleen Brown Nichols' courtroom would have been packed on Monday as she expected to hear 17 cases on the docket over about an hour. But the coronavirus changed that, with all defendants appearing on live video transmitted from the jail, no transporting deputies, only 3 lawyers present to represent clients, and 0 victims or anyone from the public in the viewing gallery. In one case, there was a not guilty plea from a family of a 6-year-old boy who police allege was killed after his family failed to feed him. a grand jury has indicted Anthony Martinez, Elizabeth Arcabeque, and Ann Martinez on first-degree murder, child abuse, and kidnapping charges. The family appeared in the jail video feed huddled together in a small white room, despite calls for socially distancing to plead not guilty. The three inmates are each being held on a $3 million cash-only bond. Coconino County presiding judge Dan Slayton enacted a new policy last week of delaying all non-mandatory hearings and requiring defendants and lawyers attend hearings via video or telephone when possible. Additionally, courts, law enforcement, and the jail are trying to keep the court from being over capacity and threatened by COVID-19 by diverting nonviolent offenders through out-of-court supervision. Attorney Greg Parzich, legal defender Joseph Carver, and public defender Roberta McVickers all told Brown Nichols they plan to file separate petitions to modify release conditions in the future. McVickers was acting on behalf of attorney Steve Harvey. The Flagstaff Police Department found the boy dead March 2nd after the grandmother called the police to report she thought her grandson had died. Police records show the family initially said the boy had stolen diet pills when asked about his size. One officer wrote the boy appeared underweight and guessed he weighed only 30 pounds, which is below average. The family later told the authorities they kept the boy and his brother locked in a closet and did not give the boys enough to eat as punishment for stealing food. Arraignment. Throughout the afternoon, Brown Nichols and the actors within the system had to get used to the new procedures. She managed lawyers who dialed into hearings without speaking to their clients before the arraignment and had to wait for defendants to shuffle in and out of the video. On top of the time it took to manage the new court approach, she was also expected to uphold the rights of the accused and rights of the victim in each case. In one case, a man who was accused of committing a burglary was allowed to be released on house arrest despite being a high risk to recommit crimes and not appear before the judge. Brown Nichols released the man from jail in light of the order to keep nonviolent offenders out of jail and away from the quarantined inmates. She considered both prosecuting and defense attorney's perspective on topics like the man's employment history, lack of previous felony convictions, and current residence. She also allowed the attorneys to make any possible argument for why he should remain in jail before making a decision. The way you score, I might not have released you today, but under these circumstances, we find ourselves in with the coronavirus. I'm going to release you on pretrial services on house arrest, Brown Nichols said. You can only leave your residence for medical care. The judge told the man she could order a warrant for his arrest if he failed to comply with any court orders in his case. However, complying with court orders could lead to a better plea offer from the prosecution and potentially lower sentence in the future. This is your chance to show the court you can be law-abiding, Brown Nichols said. And that was family of Flagstaff's six-year-old boy pleads not guilty to death in nearly empty courtroom. The next article, mayors criticize governor's orders for not going far enough on business closures, by Adrian Scabaland, Sun Staff reporter. An executive order released by Governor Doug Ducey drew criticism from several mayors Tuesday who felt it ran counter to local efforts to slow the spread of the coronavirus. The order defined what kind of businesses are considered essential and thus should remain open throughout the crisis. But in a letter sent to the governor Tuesday, the mayors of Flagstaff, Tucson, Tolleson, Somerton, and Winslow asserted that those definitions were too broad and unhelpful in social distancing efforts. The list of businesses considered essential in the governor's executive order is a long one and includes businesses like financial institutions, hardware stores, hotels, professional service such as real estate offices, golf courses, laundromats, and restaurants, as long as the food is consumed off the premises. The order also brought all communities in line with the state definition and limited the actions local officials could take above and beyond what the governor outlined. In a statement, the governor said the order was an effort to provide the state with a single, clear, and consistent policy regarding essential businesses moving forward. The order came after several cities, beginning with Flagstaff and counties, ordered certain businesses closed last week, including entertainment venues, gyms, dining in at restaurants. The state followed suit for all counties with confirmed cases of COVID-19 last week as well. Regarding the order, Ducey told the Associated Press he's preparing for the future, but at the moment, there's no need for a stay-at-home order like those issued in several U.S. cities and states, including California and New York. Arizona is not there yet, Ducey said. We're not at the same stage as other states. Flagstaff Mayor Coral Evans said the governor's executive order did not conflict with her own proclamation closing businesses. But Evans said the governor's definition for what businesses are essential is far too broad. I don't think Ducey is trying to limit anyone's exposure because everything is considered essential, Evans told the Arizona Daily Sun. We are trying to prevent the loss of life. Evans said in recent days, local officials have discussed additional restrictions to limit face-to-face contact, such as restricting banks to be only used through drive-through. But potential measures like that are now in question. We appreciate you taking action yesterday to define what are to be considered essential functions. However, in reviewing your executive order, we feel it is too broad in its definition of essential, such as payday lenders and golf courses, the letter from the mayor's reads. We acknowledge that closing businesses are painful decisions with severe economic repercussions, but immediate action will save lives. Winslow Mayor Thomas McCauley said he was worried because of how the order could accommodate the spread of the virus. The order outlines that daycares can look after the children of all workers deemed essential by the order. But McCauley said, given how many businesses are considered essential, the number of families now allowed to use daycare during the crisis is nearly everyone. Over the weekend, and a step farther than other cities, McCauley ordered all non-essential business in Winslow closed. What I'm trying to prevent in Winslow is as much counter face-to-face services that we can. We know how this spreads, McCauley said. All the parents congregate in the morning and they drop off the kids. The kids play together all day, and again, the parents congregate as they come to pick them up and go home. By the time you figure out who is considered essential services, you know, there's quite a bit of people out there, and I don't know how effective it is to try to ask people to limit contact when the governor's moving in a different direction, McCauley said. Patrick Paddock, a spokesman for Ducey, sidestepped the questions about why the state's estimated 300 golf courses were on the list. This order is about protecting public health and preserving critical financial lifelines for many communities across our state, he said in an email. While golf courses are open, national parks are not. National Forests in northern and eastern Arizona and outside the Phoenix metro area announced this week the closure of picnic sites, day use area, and developed campgrounds. Some already had suspended the rental of cabins. Grand Canyon National Park suspended private, commercial, and research trips on the Colorado River starting Tuesday until late May. Arizona has 326 confirmed cases of COVID-19 as of Tuesday, according to the State Department of Health Services. That's a jump of nearly 100 from the day earlier. Navajo Nation officials announced the discovery of 10 more cases, bringing the total to 39. All but four are in Arizona. The tribe has instituted a stay-at-home order as well and told non-essential businesses to temporarily close. As worry about resources for growing patient toll grows, Maricopa County Sheriff Paul Penzone on Tuesday suggested retrofitting a new Phoenix jail as a temporary medical clinic for the community if hospital bed space becomes scarce. The 1,500-bed jail hasn't yet opened. Ducey agreed to pause evictions for 120 days for renters quarantining due to coronavirus or are struggling from the economic fallout. To qualify, renters will have to provide documentation that they've been ordered to quarantine, have a health condition that leaves them vulnerable, or suffered substantial income loss. Renters will be required to acknowledge in writing that the terms of their lease haven't changed. For most people, COVID-19 causes only mild or moderate symptoms, such as fever and cough. For some older adults and people with health problems, it can cause more severe illness, including pneumonia. And that was Mayor criticizes governor order for not going far enough on business closures. The last front page article is Trump Looks at Easing Closures by Zeke Miller and Darlene Superville, Associated Press. President Donald Trump said Tuesday he is hoping the United States will be reopened by Easter as he weighs how to relax nationwide social distancing guidelines to put some workers back on the job during the coronavirus outbreak. Trump's optimism contradicted the warnings of some public health officials who called for stricter, not looser restrictions on public interactions. But federal officials suggested that advisories could be loosened in areas not experiencing widespread infection. And congressional and White House officials said Tuesday they were closing out final details of unprecedented legislation to rush sweeping aid to businesses and workers facing ruin from the coronavirus pandemic. After days of pressure, unusual partisanship in a crisis, and intense haggling over the fine print, negotiators appeared almost done with a nearly $2 trillion bill to respond to what Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell called the most serious threat to Americans' health in over a century, and quite likely the greatest risk to America's jobs and prosperities that we've seen since the Great Depression. With lives and the economy hanging in the balance, Trump said he was already looking towards easing the advisories that have sidelined workers, shuttered schools, and led to a widespread economic slowdown. "I would love to have the county opened up and raring to go by Easter," he said during a Fox virtual town hall. Easter is just over 2 weeks away, April 12th. "Wouldn't it be great to have all of the churches full?" Trump said in a subsequent interview. "You'll have packed churches all over the country." And as scientists warn, the worst is yet to come, with hospital systems tested beyond their capacity and healthcare workers sidelined by exposure, Trump addressed the nation, saying he was beginning to see the light at the end of the tunnel. "When the 15-day period ends next Monday," Trump said, "we'll assess at that time. We'll give it some more time if we need a little more time, but we need to open this country up." He added, "We have to get back to work much sooner than people thought." Trump's Easter target was not immediately embraced by Dr. Deborah Birx, the coordinator for the White House task force, who indicated any move would have to be guided by data still being collected. She suggested that public health professionals could recommend a general easing while pushing for local restrictions to remain in the hardest hit areas. Trump's comments came even as White House officials urged people who have left New York City amid the outbreaks to self-quarantine for 14 days after their departure, owing to a widespread rate of infection in the metro area. Health experts have made it clear that unless Americans continue to dramatically limit social interaction, staying home from work, and isolating themselves, the number of infections will overwhelm the healthcare system, as it has in parts of Italy, leading to many more deaths. While the worst outbreaks are concentrated in certain parts of the country, such as New York, experts warn that a highly infectious disease is certain to spread. The U.S. is now more than a week into an unprecedented 15-day effort to encourage all Americans to drastically scale back their public activities. The guidelines, issued by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, are voluntary, but many state and local leaders have issued mandatory restrictions in line with or even tighter than those issued by the CDC. On Monday, the U.S. saw the biggest jump yet in death toll from the virus, with more than 650 American deaths now attributed to COVID-19. Trump's comments come after dire warnings by officials in hard-hit areas. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo sounded his most dire warning yet about the corona pandemic Tuesday, saying the infection rates in New York is doubling about every 3 days, and the state could be as close as 2 weeks away from a crisis that sees 40,000 people in intensive care. Such a surge would overwhelm hospitals, which now just have 3,000 intensive care beds statewide. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin and congressional leaders engaged in final negotiations after a tumultuous but productive day on Monday. While the two sides have resolved many issues in the sweeping package, some sticking points remain. A Senate vote appeared likely on Wednesday, with a House vote to follow. At issue is an unprecedented economic rescue package that would give direct payments to most Americans, expanded unemployment benefits, and $367 billion program for small businesses to keep making payroll while workers are forced to stay home. One of the last issues to close concerned $500 billion for guaranteed subsidized loans to larger industries. A one-time payment of $1,200 per person or $300, I'm sorry, a one-time payment of $1,200 per person or $3,000 for a family of four would go directly to the public. And that was Trump looks at easing closures. You are tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona, and we are reading from the Arizona Daily Sun. Moving on to local news, Flagstaff Restaurants and Bars Still Open for Business by Cody J. Bashur, Associate Editor. And an editor's note, this list is being constantly updated. Businesses should submit their information to the Facebook group, #WeAreOpen, #WeAreFlagstaff. Additionally, for businesses not listed, please contact the Arizona Daily Sun and provide the relevant information. Customers should check with businesses for possible in-house delivery in addition to third-party delivery options. Alejandro's, 2800 South Lone Tree, 623-694-2108, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., curbside pickup available, delivery on Grubhub and Lodell. Altitudes, 2 South Beaver Street, 928-607-3405, noon to 5 p.m., Friday to Sunday, with a limited menu, gift cards available. ATL Wings, 1300 South Milton Road, Suite 107, 928-482-5590, open for takeout and free delivery. Agave Mexican Restaurant, 1580 East Route 66, 928-774-1429, delivery on DoorDash. Asia Station, 121 South San Francisco Street, 928-440-5381, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., Tuesday to Sunday. Curbside pickup available, delivery on Grubhub, Postmates, Uber Eats, and in-house. Bandera Craft Tacos, 11 East Aspen Avenue, 928-440-5403, 11:30 to 7:30 p.m. Curbside pickup available. Delivery on DoorDash, Grubhub, and Uber Eats. Family meals, 4 to 6 people, available for $20 to $25. Beaver Street, 11 South Beaver Street, number 1, 928-779-0079, 11:30 to 7:30. Online ordering, curbside pickup available, gift cards available. Bigfoot Barbecue, 20 North LaRue Street, 928-226-1677, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. until 8 p.m. on Sundays. Curbside pickup and catering available. Delivery on Grubhub, Lodell, and Postmates, gift certificates available. Brandy's Restaurant and Bakery, 1500 East Cedar Avenue, number 40, 928-779-2187, 6:30 a.m. to 3 p.m., curbside pickup and takeout available. Order online at ChowNet, delivery on DoorDash and Postmates. Gift certificates available, free latte with any takeout order of $10 or more. Breakfast and mimosa kits for $20. Brady's Cafe, 18 South Beaver Street, 928-774-8301, 7 a.m. to 2 p.m., curbside pickup available, delivery on DoorDash and Postmates, gift certificates available, free latte with any takeout order of $10 or more, breakfast and mimosa kits for $20. Cafe Daily Fair, 408 West Historic Route 66, 928-774-2855, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., Tuesday to Saturday, available for pickup and delivery. Casa Duarte, 1000 North Humphrey Street, 928-606-1500, 9:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Call for takeout, drive-up service available, delivery on Lodell, gift certificates available. Cracker Barrel, 2560 East Lucky Lane, 928-773-1524, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., carryout and curbside pickup available. Order online. Cedar House Coffee Shop, 2009 Cedar Avenue, 928-678-5976, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m., curbside pickup available, gift certificates available. Chili's Grill and Bar, 1500 South Milton Road, 928-774-4546. Curbside takeout available, delivery on DoorDash. Coco's Bakery Restaurant, 360 West Fort Meadows Street, 928-774-8886, 8 a.m. to 1 p.m., and 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. Open for takeout and delivery daily. For takeout, call ahead or go to cocosbakery.com. For delivery, use DoorDash or Grubhub. Collins, 2 North LaRue Street, 928-214-7363. Noon to 8 p.m., Tuesday to Sunday. Curbside pickup available. Delivery on DoorDash and Uber Eats. Gift certificates available. Kids eat free with purchase of entree and beverage. Cornish Pasty, 26 South San Francisco Street, 928-440-5196. Available for special orders, call to inquire. Crown Royal Cafe, 3300 West Historic Route 66, 928-522-9237, takeout available. Culver's, 1716 East Route 66, 928-266-1924. Free basket for specific groups, March 23rd to 28th. March 23rd and 24th, free basket for healthcare workers. March 25 and 26th, free value basket for first responders and emergency workers. March 27 and 28th, free kids purchase with free kids meal with purchase of a value basket or dinner. Call in orders available. Pick up and drive through when ready. Dank Sammy's, 15 North Agassiz Street, 928-606-7621, 5 to 10 p.m. Wednesday to Sunday. Curbside pickup available. Delivery on DoorDash, Grubhub, Lodell, and Postmates. Free delivery with minimum purchase. Distance is limited. Dara Thai, 14 South San Francisco Street, 928-774-0047. Takeout and delivery available. Order delivery on DoorDash, Grubhub, Lodell, and Uber Eats. Dark Sky Brewery, 117 North Beaver Street, A, 928-440-5151, noon to 8 p.m. Cans to go, order online, by phone, or walk-up. Denny's, 2122 South Milton Road, 928-779-1371, and 2306 East Lucky Lane, 928-774-3413, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Carryout and delivery available. Order online. Delivery fees waived. Diablo Burger, 120 North LaRue Street, 928-774-3274. Takeout available, no cash, pay with card over the phone. Downtown Diner, 7 East Aspen Avenue, 928-774-3492. Curbside pickup available for takeout, 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. and delivery on Lodell. Drinking Horn Meadery, 506 North Grant Street, 928-774-1049, 5 to 8 p.m. Thursday and Friday, noon to 8 Saturday and Sunday. Orders taken over the phone, curbside pickup available, gift certificates available. El Capitan, 1800 South Milton Road, number 21, 8028, 4 to 8 p.m., Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Ticket menu is limited. Order online, pay online with Venmo or PayPal at pickup. Taco kits available for $13. Order four or more trays and delivery available within city limits. Iwa's Thai Cuisine, 110 South San Francisco Street, 928-774-4060. Takeout and delivery available. Delivery on DoorDash, Lodell, and Postmates. Famous Pizza, 104 East Route 66, 928-440-5286, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Sunday to Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday. Online ordering on ChowNow, delivery available on DoorDash, gift certificates available. Fire Creek Coffee, 22 West Route 66, 928-774-2266. Visit store online, takeout, and delivery available. Fratelli's Pizza, all three locations. Call 928-774-9200. Carryout available. Go Sushi, 1411 South Milton Road, 928-440-5001. Call for free delivery. Happy hour 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. and 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. Delivery also on Grubhub, Lodell, and Postmates. Hero Sushi, 1312 South Plaza Way, 928-226-8030, noon to 2 p.m. and 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Curbside pickup available, delivery on DoorDash and Postmates, gift certificates available. Historic Brewing, 110 South San Francisco Street, 928-774-0454, noon to 8 p.m., Wednesday to Sunday. Available for curbside pickup, call-in pickup order, delivery on Postmates, gift certificates available. Hops on Birch, 22 East Birch Avenue, number 2, 928-440-5380, 3 to 8 p.m. for to-go only. Hunan East, 1926 North 4th Street, number 8, 928-526-1009. Takeout and delivery available. Delivery from 3 to 7:30 p.m. Il Rosso, 6 East Aspen Avenue, number 120, 928-440-5272, 3 to 8 p.m. To-go orders only, pick up at the door, credit card only. Java Juice Cafe, 1530 South Riordan Ranch Street, 928-774-1034, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., gift certificates available. Jitters, 3504 West Route 66, 928-526-3277. Free delivery on four or more sandwiches. Kachina Downtown Restaurant, 522 East Route 66, 928-779-1944, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., subject to change. Delivery on Lodell, gift certificates available. Karma Sushi, 6 East Route 66, 928-774-6100, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., happy hour prices all day. Curbside pickup available, order online at Chow Now, gift certificates available. Kickstand Cafe, 719 North Humphreys Street, 928-779-5393, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., drive-thru available, gift cards available, delivery on DoorDash. Kokio, 116 South San Francisco Street, 928-774-1555, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m., Tuesday to Sunday, to-go available. Little America, 2515 East Butler Avenue. Silver Pine Restaurant available for takeout, call 928-779-7950. Curbside pickup also available. Breakfast 7 to 11 a.m., lunch 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., and dinner 4 to 8 p.m. Travel Center Deli and Grill also open for takeout orders 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. Los Altanos, 1481 South Milton Road, 928-226-7552, 8 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. Delivery available for DoorDash. Lotus Lounge, 106 North San Francisco Street, 928-440-5568. Takeout and delivery to selected areas available Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Lumber Yard, 5 South San Francisco Street, 928-779-2739, 11 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. Online ordering for curbside pickup, including beer to go. Gift certificates available. Lux North, 11 East Aspen Avenue, 602-361-8866, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. for to-go orders. Macy's, 14 South Beaver Street, 928-774-2243, to-go and takeout only. Mama Luisa's, 2710 North Steves Boulevard, 928-526-6809, 4:30 to 8 p.m. Curbside pickup available, request when calling, gift certificates available. Matador Coffee Roasting Company, 203 South Milton Road, 602-971-3600. And 7133 US 89, 928-527-1252. Regular hours. Breakfast served until noon on Milton and all day on the east side. Martin's, 112 East Route 66, 928-773-4701, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Curbside pickup and take-up available. Delivery on Lodell, gift certificates available. McMillan's, 2 West Route 66, 928-774-3840. Noon to 8 p.m., takeout available, delivery on Lodell, gift certificates available. Mike and Rhonda's, 21 South Milton Road, 928-774-7008, 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mix, 120 North LaRue Street, 928-774-8200. Online ordering available on Chow Now. Delivery on Postmates. Menu lunch only, breakfast added soon. Morning Glory Cafe, 115 South San Francisco, 928-774-3705. Carryout available and delivery on Lodell. Mother Road, 7 South Mike's Pike Street, 928-774-9139, and 1300 East Butler Avenue, number 200, 928-774-0492, 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. Takeout or online orders for pickup, 4 packs for $10, cases for $50, and growler fills 10. Gift certificates available with 25% going towards an employee fund. Moselle's Downtown Bakery, 6 East Aspen Avenue, 928 607-7855, delivery on Grubhub. MPM Bo, 2112 North 4th Street, 928-714-9999. Call in for takeout, delivery available. Namarco's Downtown, 928-779-2691. East Side and West Side, 928-779-0024. 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Sunday to Wednesday. 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Thursday to Saturday. Order online at Namarco's website. Curbside pickup and takeout and delivery available. Gift certificates available. Oakmont Flagstaff, 2380 North Oakmont Drive, 928-526-7990, noon to 8 p.m., curbside pickup available, family dinners for four available, gift certificates available. Olive Garden, 2550 South Beulah Boulevard, 928-779-3000, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Sunday to Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday. Online ordering for to-go available as well as delivery. Oregano's, West Side 1061 South Plaza Way, 928-773-8600. East Side 980 North Country Club Drive, 928-233-3000. Call in, online order, and curbside pickup available. Delivery on DoorDash. Outback Steakhouse, 2600 East Lucky Lane, 928-774-7630. Delivery and curbside takeout. Over Easy, 2500 South Woodlands Village Boulevard, Suite 27, 928-213-3410, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m., online ordering and curbside pickup available, delivery on Lodell and Uber Eats, gift certificates available. Pato Thai, 20 East Route 66, 928-213-1825 and 928-226-8940, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. and 5 to 8 p.m., Monday to Saturday. Takeout and delivery available on DoorDash, Lodell, and Postmates. Gift certificates available. Pita Pit, 23 East Aspen Avenue, 928-213-1330, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., takeout and delivery available. Pizza Patio, 109 East Phoenix Avenue, 928-779-4000, takeout and delivery available. Pizza Cletta, 203 West Phoenix Avenue, 928-774-3242, noon to 9 p.m. Curbside pickup available, delivery on DoorDash, gift certificates available. Prepper Meats and Provisions, 110 East Route 66, 928-774-9001, carry out and delivery available, gift cards to Prepper, Bricks, and Criollo available. New Jersey Pizza Company, 2224 East Cedar Avenue, number 6, 928-774-5000, 4 to 9 p.m., curbside pickup available, delivery through Grubhub, Lodell, and Postmates, gift certificates available. Satchmo's, 2320 North 4th Street, 928-774-7292, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m., curbside pickup available, delivery on Grubhub and Postmates, gift certificates available. Shift Kitchen, 107 North San Francisco Street, 928-440-5135, 11:30 a.m. to 8 p.m., curbside pickup and delivery available within 5-mile radius. Single Speed Roasters, 2214 Northwest Street, 928-226-0520, curbside pickup available. Sizzler Eastside, 3540 East Route 66, 928-526-0520. 3391, 11:30 to 8 p.m. Carry out and pickup available. Sizzler Westside, 2105 South Milton Road, 928-779-3267, 11:30 to 8 p.m. Carry out and pickup available. Sosoba, 12 West Historic Route 66, number 104, 928-774-3471, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Takeout and delivery available on Postmates. Steep Leaf Lounge, 1 East Aspen Avenue, 928-440-5128, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Call-in orders, free shipping, order online. Tacos Los Altos Westside, 2500 Woodlands Village Boulevard, number 1, 928-255-0369, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m., curbside pickup available, delivery on DoorDash, Grubhub, Lodell, Postmates, gift certificates available. Taverna Greek Grill, 2420 South Woodlands Village Boulevard, 928-213-9994, noon to 8 p.m., curbside pickup available, delivery on Lodell, gift certificates available. Teppan Fuji, 2500 South Woodlands Village Boulevard, number 9, 928-637-6444. Takeout and delivery available. That Place Projects, Tourist Home, 928-779-2811. Annex Cocktail Lounge and Tinderbox Kitchen, 928-226-8400. 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Order online. Curbside pickup and takeout available on south side of Tourist Home. Gift certificates available. Delivery on DoorDash, Grubhub, Lodell, and Postmates. The Real Kitchen, 1509 South Milton Road, 928-440-5579. Order online at eatattherreal.com. Prepackaged meals available for carryout. Once daily deliveries beginning March 23rd. Texas Roadhouse, 2201 East Route 66, 928-522-9247. Order online or call. Village Baker, 1237 South Plaza Way, 928-773-9310. Order by phone for curbside pickup. Deliveries beginning March 22nd, available within city limits on orders of $15 or more. Order between 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. for same-day delivery. Wanderlust, 1519 North Main Street, 102, 928-351-7952, 5 to 8 p.m. Wednesday to Friday, 4 to 7 p.m. Saturday to Sunday. Can exchange growlers for a full one. Western Post, 12 East Route 66, number 102, 928-774-1533, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., curbside pickup available. White Dove Coffee, 2211 East 7th Avenue, 928-774-3059, 6:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Call-in order will be brought to car. Wildflower, 530 Piccadilly Drive, 928-233-5010, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Order takeout online. Delivery available on Postmates. Your Pie, 2619 South Woodlands Village Boulevard, Suite 650. 50-928-440-5500, online ordering and delivery available. And finally, 1899 Bar and Grill, 307 West DuPont Avenue, 928-523-1899. Call for a pickup order, delivery available on campus through Starship Delivery. And that was Flagstaff Restaurants and Bars, still open for business. I think there's time for another couple local stories. So NAU to hold spring graduation ceremonies virtually due to coronavirus. Spring graduation ceremonies at Northern Arizona University won't be happening this year, or at least not as originally planned. In an email to students and faculty, NAU President Rita Chang said she made the decision to cancel commencement at the Sky Dome after much thought and careful consideration of the guidelines outlined by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Chang said the move was prompted by what she called unprecedented global health crisis. To replace the in-person ceremonies, the university is organizing a virtual commencement ceremony that will occur in May. Additionally, graduates have been invited to walk in a special in-person ceremony in December, Chang said in her email. I'm extremely proud of the way our lumberjacks have come together during these challenging times to find ways to help each other and ensure a better and brighter future, the email read. And that was NAU to hold spring graduation ceremonies virtually due to the coronavirus. Next is Coconino and Kaibab National Forest closed sites amid coronavirus concern by Daily Sun staff. Coconino and Kaibab National Forest have closed or developed recreation and day use sites indefinitely to protect the public and employees' health from the impact of COVID-19. The vast majority of the forest is still open to visitors who want to spend time outdoors participating in recreational opportunities that support social distancing, such as hiking and biking on trails and dispersed camping, according to the Coconino National Forest release. However, recreation sites, facilities, and restrooms are closed. More sites may close in the future, depending on the situation, as circumstances can change rapidly in response to COVID-19. Notification to those who may have made any reservations will be made as soon as possible, and refunds will be processed. Coconino National Forest officials say visitors should mitigate resource impacts whenever they recreate by taking their trash with them when they depart and appropriately managing human waste by burying it at least 6 to 8 inches deep and 200 feet away from water, trails, and recreation sites. All Coconino National Forest offices are conducting business and providing services virtually. Members of the public who have additional questions that cannot be answered through the Coconino National Forest website can contact a ranger station. Here's a list of the closed Coconino National Forest sites and resources. Day-use sites, Banjo Bill Picnic Site, Bootlegger Picnic Site, Clint's Well Picnic Site, Enconoso Picnic Site, Fossil Creek Area, Halfway Picnic Site, Long Valley Day-use Site, Oak Creek Vista, Group Campgrounds, Chavez Crossing Group Campground, Clear Creek Group Campground, Dairy Springs, Elks Group, Long Valley Work Center, Moki, and O'Leary Group Campgrounds. Heritage Sites, Honong Key, Palak Key, V-Bar V Heritage Sites. Rental Cabins, Apache Maid, Crescent Moon, Fernow, Kendrick Cabins, Single Family Unit Campgrounds at Ashurst Lake, Bonito, Blue Ridge, Canyon Vista, Cave Springs, Clear Creek, Clint's Well, Dairy Springs, Double Springs, Kell Springs, Knoll Lake, Lakeview, Little Eldon Springs, Locket Meadow, Manzanita, Pine Flat, Pine Grove, Rock Crossing, Visitor Center, Red Rock Ranger Station and Visitor Center, Oak Creek Visitor Center. Here's a list of closures from the Kaibab National Forest by district. North Kaibab Ranger District, Lefevre Overlook, 2CN Ranger District, Grandview Lookout Tower Day Use Site, Russell Tank Day Use Site, Williams Ranger District, Oak Hill Snow Play Area, Kaibab Lake Day Use Site, Dogtown Lake Day-Use Site. For both of those, the boat launch and parking will remain open. Sycamore Falls Climbing Area and Day-Use Site. Next, Arizona Appeals Court upholds Jody Arias' murder conviction by Walter Berry Associated Press. The Arizona Court of Appeals on Tuesday upheld Jody Arias' first-degree murder conviction and life prison sentence in the 2008 killing of her former boyfriend. Arias' lawyer had argued that prosecutor misconduct and a judge failure to control news coverage during the case deprived her of her right to a fair trial. But the three-member appeals court, in a 29-page opinion, unanimously concluded that prosecutor Juan Martinez's conduct in the case did not outweigh Arias' guilt. We conclude that Arias was convicted based on the overwhelming evidence of her guilt, not as a result of prosecutorial misconduct, the ruling said. However, it noted, an egregious case of misconduct by a highly experienced prosecutor who inappropriately engaged in self-promoting conduct. The panel condemned Martinez's argumentative phrasing of questions to defense witnesses, adding that his aggressive tone and combative bullying behavior were recurring issues in the trial, and Arias' attorneys moved for a mistrial 6 times. We strongly disapprove of his actions. We are compelled to follow the well-established principle that we do not reverse convictions merely to punish prosecutors' misdeeds. Arias was convicted of killing ex-boyfriend Travis Alexander at his home in the Phoenix suburb of Mesa. Prosecutors have said Arias violently attacked Alexander in a jealous rage after he wanted to end their affair and planned a trip to Mexico with another woman. Arias has acknowledged killing Alexander, but claims she acted in self-defense after he attacked her. He was stabbed nearly 30 times and had his throat slit and was shot in the head. The case attracted worldwide attention as salacious and violent details about Arias and Alexander were broadcast live. The guilt phase of the Arias trial ended in 2013, with jurors convicting her of murder, but deadlocked on punishment. A second sentencing trial ended in early 2015, with another jury deadlocked, leading a judge to sentence Arias to life. The Maricopa County Attorney's Office moved to fire Martinez this year after suspending him, but the dismissal was stayed pending his appeal under civil service protections. Martinez has been a county prosecutor for 30 years. A call to Martinez seeking comment on the court ruling was immediately returned. Peg Green, one of Arias' attorneys, declined comment on the appeals court opinion, and that was Arizona Appeals Court upheld Jody Arias' murder conviction. We will have a short break. When we return, we'll continue with more from the Arizona Daily Sun. There are no obituaries today, so we'll move on to Astrograph. Look for solutions. Taking on too much or letting others take advantage of you will lead to disappointment and disgruntlement. Size up your situation and make plans that will help you engineer a way to move forward from a difficult spot to a place that excites you. Aries, you'll get further if you're kind. Someone may irritate you, but if you respond with a positive attitude and sound suggestions, you will avoid a senseless argument. Taurus, make calls, do research, and close deals. Don't rely on someone else to take care of your affairs. If you want to change, make it happen. Take responsibility for your life and happiness. Gemini, refuse to give in to someone pressuring you. Avoid being taken for granted. Don't let frustration and anger mount because you are trying to accommodate everyone. Cancer, your memory won't let you down. The lessons of experience coupled with a unique approach to getting things done will help you excel. A romantic gesture will brighten your day. Leo, don't limit what you can do by taking on responsibilities that don't belong to you. Choose how you spend your time and use your talents carefully. Learn from experience. Virgo, a last-minute change of plans will lead to an unexpected gain. Join forces with someone who has much to offer as you. Don't ignore a professional opportunity. Libra, use your imagination to fine-tune your ideas and make your move. Think big, but don't go over budget. Be willing to bargain for what you want. Scorpio, an attitude adjustment will give you the boost you need. Someone who wants to learn to team up with you will point out a talent or skill you didn't realize you possess. Sagittarius, be aware of false advertising. Not everyone will be honest or honor their promises. Stick close to home and to the people you know you can trust. Capricorn, Don't act on an assumption or you will end up paying the price. If you connect with people who share your mindset, you'll be able to bring about change that will make a difference. Aquarius, dig up an old project and give it a facelift. Approaching an old idea with a fresh attitude will lead to prosperous venture. Someone who falls outside your age range will provide insight. And finally, Pisces, acceptance will be the key to getting ahead. Size up what's going on around you and use whatever you can to your advantage. It's time to take a lead. And that was the Astrograph for today. Next, we'll move on to Dear Abby. Dear Abby, my husband Charlie and I have been married for 7 years. We are in our mid-60s. This is a second marriage for both of us. He was widowed some years before we met. He is sweet and caring, but one issue causes friction between us. It's about letters he and his late wife exchanged. They were high school sweethearts. She kept all the letters he sent when he was away in college, and after she died, he wanted to keep them. It bothers me that he's still attached to them. Whenever we talk about the subject, I ask him to dispose of them. He gets defensive and says he doesn't understand why it bothers me and accuses me of being unreasonable. Am I being unreasonable, or is it time to let the past stay in the past, as painful as it might be to detach from objects that were an intimate part of his previous marriage? Signed, Reasoning in Illinois. Dear Reasoning, why have you not accepted that Charlie had a life before fate intervened, took his wife, and you entered the picture? People who had a miserable first marriage, as yours was, often choose not to remarry. Charlie is who he is, in part because of his happy marriage to his first wife. You are making a mistake by competing with her. Dear Abby, I'm being married in a couple months. I feel like I'm living a real-life fairy tale, but not always in a good way. My fiancé's stepfamily has made it clear that they do not approve of our union. They have gone as far as to ask me to leave him. He is appalled by their behavior and has told them they are no longer welcome in our lives or at our wedding. They were livid and blamed me. I don't want my wedding to be the cause of pain, so I've tried to be understanding, gracious, and forgiving, but they are toxic people. My fiancé is my very own real-life Prince Charming, and I want nothing more than to spend the rest of my life with him. Abby, I'm terrified they're going to show up the wedding anyway or try to somehow sabotage it. What should I do? Signed, Cinderella in New England. Dear Cinderella, allow me to congratulate you and your fiancé on your upcoming nuptials and offer my sympathy for your grief, which is undeserved. You may need to hire professional security to ensure the peace, or see if security is provided at the venue. The way to prevent unwanted intruders in the future would be to move as far away from his family as is feasible. And that was Dear Abby. You're tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona, and we're reading from the Arizona Daily Sun. Next is the opinions and editorials, and we have a guest editorial, Climate Change, Another Crisis We're Facing, by the Los Angeles Times Editorial Board. There is no doubt that the COVID-19 pandemic is the crisis of the moment, and a terribly serious one at that, threatening not only human lives, but also the global economy. But it's not the only crisis the world is facing, and we ought not, while confronting the immediate menace, disregard the other immense threat looming over us, global warming. Rather, somewhat counterintuitively, we should use the current pandemic to learn some lessons and glean some insights about other perils we soon will be facing. We're not suggesting that climate change contributed to the coronavirus outbreak. There seems to be no direct link, although experts say a warming world could accelerate pandemics of insect-borne diseases. But the global response to this pandemic does show that the world can come together to confront a shared threat. That could bode well for addressing climate change if we treat it as seriously. The pandemic is putting a chokehold on economic activity in hard-hit regions of the world, China, Europe, and here in the U.S. When factories and businesses are closed, workers and customers stay home. With few people traveling long distance, airlines slash flights. Sure, people and businesses continue to use energy, but not at the levels they did just a month ago. And that reduction in energy use, in turn, reduces fossil fuel consumption and emissions of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. Little of this will be long-lasting. Once the epidemic subsides, economic activity will resume, and so presumably will admissions. But the crisis offers opportunities for change, and we ought to be mindful of them as the pandemic and the economic crisis play out. Businesses are learning how much of their workforce can do their jobs remotely, which offers guidance for how they may operate in the future with a lighter carbon footprint. Consumers are undergoing a forced experiment in changing patterns of shopping and consumption. Congress and President Donald Trump are also negotiating a series of bailouts and other support packages to help people and businesses survive. They should take this opportunity to press for changes in how some of these industries operate. The airline industry, for instance, should be asked to do more to reduce its carbon emissions, which have soared in recent years and will continue to rise as air travel itself is projected to increase. A September paper from the International Council on Clean Transportation used industry data to conclude that commercial air operators account for 2.4% of global carbon emissions from burning fossil fuels, and that industry emissions in 2018 were 32% higher than 5 years before. One available emission-reducing alternative is the use of so-called sustainable aviation fuels, including biofuels, but they are more expensive than conventional jet fuel, and airline companies can be pressured to adopt aggressive plans to replace higher, older, high-polluting planes. That would be in line with the demand for increased fuel efficiency commitments that the Obama administration attached to its bailout package for the auto industry. Of course, extracting climate-friendly concessions will vary by the industry seeking bailout help, so we won't get too prescriptive here. The main imperative for the government is to keep climate policy in mind as it devises a plan to rescue the economy. But wait, you think? This is a Trump administration, which at best shrugs at the science and ignores global warming. True enough, but Congress is also involved, and it can place climate considerations on the table. Here's a good place to start. The government should not be bailing out the oil and gas industry at a time when we should be focusing on expanding production of renewable energy and the infrastructure to store and deliver it. In recent days, early coronavirus scoffers, including the president, have come around to the reality that this pandemic is a deadly threat and have begun to take strong steps to address it. Yet global warming is a larger and longer-lasting threat to humankind. We have about a decade, according to experts, to make significant reductions in carbon emissions to avoid the worst ramifications of climate change. The world is already seeing the effects in longer and more severe droughts in some places, record flooding in others, stronger and more intense tropical storms, and regional temperature rises that are making parts of the world nearly uninhabitable. The science confirms all this, as it has confirmed the spread and dangers from the novel coronavirus. So maybe accepting reality of COVID-19 will lead the administration to recognize the reality of climate change and work with Congress to begin addressing it in meaningful ways. And that was Climate Change, Another Crisis We're Facing. Next is your views. What causes people to act like hoarders? What causes perfectly normal-looking human beings to abandon all accepted social norms and transform themselves into some kind of primeval food hoarding creatures, totally ignorant of anyone else's needs? That's what I asked myself when I was confronted with empty supermarket shelves and customers whose shopping carts could barely hold what was piled on them. Could it be some primitive survival instinct of our Cro-Magnon ancestors still lurked deep inside some modern humans, and, when disaster strikes, causes them to revert back to uncivilized, self-centered behavior? I hope that those who emptied shelves and freezers in grocery stores will never have to explain the virtuous sharing to their children, because they themselves have no clue what it means. Signed, Margaret Novak Flagstaff. Next is, ashamed to see how much money is being spent. It is a little upsetting to see so much money being squandered on helping people and businesses affected by the COVID-19 epidemic. Surely that money would have been better spent on building the border funds that so urgently needed. Signed, Ivo Lucida, Flagstaff. Next, work together to get past the virus. With the help of local businesses, churches, healthcare facilities, and our regional political officials, we are finally getting people to stay home. However, there are still some additional things we can do to slow the spread of COVID-19 in northeastern Arizona. Heed the advice of local leaders, such as the Navajo Nation president, who said, "Please listen to authorities, leadership, when they say stay home." He said, "That's the best way to fight the virus." Avoid all mass gatherings, including church. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has canceled all meetings at its facilities. Though the Catholic Church in Winslow relieved its members, including myself and my family, of the obligation to attend Sunday Mass, a letter was sent to parishioners stating that Masses would still be available to those who wish to attend. I urge everyone to stay home. I recommend the Gallup Diocese suspend all Masses for a month. There are services on television. As sad as that sounds, we all may have to spend Easter at home. Local pharmacies, such as the Safeway Pharmacy in Winslow, is delivering medications to those that need them. Call your pharmacy and see if they can deliver your meds, too. Both the Little Colorado Medical Center Physician Office and the Winslow Indian Healthcare Center Clinic are calling patients and recommending phone visits or the postponement of face-to-face appointments when appropriate. Urge your provider to do the same if you have an upcoming appointment. All elective surgery has been canceled. If you are not sure your procedure is necessary at this time, call your surgeon and ask. Together, we can prevent significant spread of the coronavirus. Let's support each other and be neighborly. Avoid panic buying at the store. Wave to your neighbor as they drive or walk by your house. Avoid handshaking and hugging. Wash your hands and don't touch your face. We will get through this pandemic together, one nation, indivisible, under God, but only if we work together and stay home. Signed, Gregory Jaron, Winslow. Add Save Schultz Meadow to November ballot. I'm making a formal request to all members of the City Council and to the mayor. As you are aware, a concerned group of citizens has been collecting signatures to put a voter initiative ballot to Save Schultz Meadow. Our goal is to have this property designated as an open space. Nearly 4,100 signatures are required to get the item on the ballot, with a realistic goal of 6,000 being necessary to validate and certify the petitions. At this time, we estimate we have nearly 4,000 signatures. In the interest of safety of our community, we have decided to suspend organized signature gathering. Nothing is more critical at this time than doing one's part to help stop the virus that's affecting our community, state, and our nation. We are asking the City Council to take a leadership role concerning this initiative and vote to put the item on the November ballot. The Save Schultz Meadow Group respects the democratic process and will respect the wishes of the voter. There's still time left to get this on the November ballot. Thank you for your consideration. Signed, Robert White, Save Schultz Meadow. And those were your views. Next, we'll move on to sports. Olympics postponement leaves athletes scrambling to decide their path forward. By James Ellingsworth and Howard Feindrick, Associated Press. Would-be Olympians and their coaches have gone from days and weeks of mulling one sort of uncertainty raised by the coronavirus pandemic. Are the Tokyo Games going to be held as scheduled? To a whole other set of questions now that an indefinite postponement is official. To begin with, when exactly are these summer games going to be staged? All that's known for sure as of now, based on Tuesday's announcement by the International Olympic Committee and local organizers, is that instead of July 24th to August 9th, 2020, they will be sometime in 2021. What will the qualifying rules be? Some sports already finished that process. Others are in a total state of flux. More than anything, it pushes back what life was going to offer, said Kat Osterman, who turns 37 next month and is the oldest player on the U.S. softball team. My husband and I have talked about the possibility of having a kid after July of 2020, said Osterman, a pitcher who is one of two holdovers from a team that collected a silver medal at the 2018 Olympics, and now that has to go into effect after 2021. Or as Belgian cyclist Greg Van Avermaet, a 2016 Olympic road race champion who turns 34 in May, put it, "The postponement means I will be another year older, which isn't ideal, but I know I will be as motivated as ever." American fencer Kat Holmes was an Olympian 4 years ago and was on her way to earning a spot this time with an eye on starting medical school in New York in the fall. She had everything lined up, too. Holmes was going to catch a flight from Japan to Newark Airport right after the closing ceremonies so she could make it to her first day of school orientation. Everything now becomes more complicated, including the prospect of missing a bunch of class time if the Tokyo Olympics are shifted to May 2021, for example. I have to postpone the rest of my life for a year and kind of confront what the rest of a qualification means. We don't know, Holmes said. I didn't come this far not to give 100% at the Olympics, and it's kind of the same thing with med school. I finally got into med school just like 2 or 3 weeks ago. It seems like a decade ago. U.S. swimmer Allison Schmidt is someone else who may need to reconsider her plans. Schmidt, who owns 8 medals, including 4 golds, has dealt with depression and left her sport for 2 years after the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Games. But she returned to training under coach Bob Bowman in hopes of making her 4th Olympic team this year. She'll turn 30 in June and says it's too soon to make a definitive choice. I know that our goals have not changed just because the date of the Olympics has changed, Schmidt said. Yet this is a time filled with emotion. I don't think it would be smart to make an immediate decision with these emotions. There are also those who could benefit from a delay because it offers extra months to let injuries heal. Basketball stars Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving come to mind, so long as the rescheduling doesn't conflict with the NBA season, as do reigning Olympian champions as South African 400-meter runner Wade van Niekerk and British tennis player Andy Murray. Others have financial concerns. Baseball is returning to the Olympics for the first time since 2008, and former New York Mets minor leaguer Jeremy Wolf was set to play outfield for Israel. The 26-year-old Wolf will now try to get a non-baseball job this summer and has no idea if he will be able to play in 2021. It changes a lot of things for our guys, Wolf said in a text message. Who can still play? Who can afford it? Because we're not being paid. Who will still be in game shape? A year and a half is an eternity in baseball time. The overwhelming initial sentiments Tuesday seemed to be a mix of disappointment and understanding, even among former athletes. My first thought was, I was relieved. Now there's more of a chance that we can beat this and can do what we need to do to save as many lives as possible, said Michael Phelps, the retired swimmer who collected a record 23 goals. I was happy to see them logically making a smart decision. It's just frustrating it took this long. 3-time beach volleyball gold medalist Kerry Walsh Jennings called the postponement the responsible choice. Can you imagine making this decision after how many years and how much blood and sweat on a global level? People are having a problem calling off weddings and calling off little tournaments. So imagine with all the $1 billion that's gone into this, Jennings said. A little more than half of the qualifying spots for Tokyo had been determined before the COVID-19 outbreak began affecting sporting events around the globe, so sports federations will need to make adjustments. Entire countries are now on lockdown. More than 400,000 people worldwide have been infected, and more than 18,000 have died, according to a running count kept by Johns Hopkins University. There is no need to host the Olympics at this time and have athletes sick and dying, said Julius Yago, a silver medalist in the javelin for Kenya 4 years ago. The IOC and Japan still have work ahead to pull off a well-organized and safe summer games in the unprecedented circumstance of a postponed Olympics. Competitors are dealing with new ground too, right along with everyone else. Many have both a sense of relief and of grief, U.S. women's volleyball coach Kara Corrali said of the athletes' reaction to postponement. Tons of unknowns. We will, of course, reset, re-engage, and figure out things one day at a time. Corrali, the only person to win Olympic gold in beach and indoor volleyball, wrote in an email, "What other choice do we have?" And that was Olympics postponement leaves athletes scrambling to decide their path forward. Next is The No-Win Olympics Get Another Chance by Jim Litke, AP sports columnist. Money talks, which is the short answer for why it took this long for the swells at the International Olympic Committee to listen to reason. For weeks, IOC leaders framed their refusal to shut down Tokyo 2020 as a noble cause instead of a cash grab. But that's because they could afford to. 5 days earlier, asked whether postponing the Games would hurt the committee's ability to pay its bills on time, President Thomas Bach didn't have to think long. "The IOC has no cash flow problems," he replied. Never mind that the very same athletes who actually make the Games go were expected to continue sacrificing and putting their lives on hold in the meantime. U.S. fencer Kat Holmes, to name one, was sent to begin medical school in the fall and won't know for some time when or whether she'll be able to compete in 2021. But it wasn't the tales about tough choices like Holmes or photos and videos of world-class competitors reduced to lifting weights in empty parking lots or banging volleyballs off a board set up in the backyard that finally convinced the IOC and Japanese organizers to pull the plug. It wasn't even threats from Australia and Canada to stay away or the growing reluctance of the U.S. Olympic Committee to take part. It was simple math. The reported cost to stage Tokyo 2020 was already upwards of $28 billion. In the same New York Times interview, where Bach acknowledged the IOC had plenty of money on hand, he also conceded delaying the game by a year or two posed no real threat to its long-term viability either. "We have our risk management policies in place and our insurance, and this will make it possible for us to continue our operations and organize future Olympic Games," Bach said. "Hide the empty seats" is a popular dictate in the U.S. in the TV sports industry, something executives remind producers and directors about all the time. It's based on the idea that if only so many fans turned up in the stands, why would a viewer bother to watch? Well, a cobbled-together Olympics this July would have made hiding anything impossible. It was already a logistical nightmare. With nearly every sport suspending play in the wake of the pandemic, more than two-thirds of the 11,000 potential Olympians from 200 countries still hadn't qualified. There's no way to know how many of them, not to mention Olympic officials, spectators, and corporate sponsors and their clients, would have begged off with concerns about safety. But it's a safe bet that when Bach laid out the spreadsheets alongside the risk management insurance policies, he and the rest of the IOC brass concluded they'd be risking a lot more of their nest egg by going ahead this year instead of next. A few days ago, he asked for 4 weeks to make that assessment. Instead of apologizing for stringing people along, Bach came back in 2 days, still pushing the myth that the Olympic flame could become the light at the end of the tunnel in which the world finds itself as present. Whatever. The saving grace is that not everything is about money. Most Olympic athletes make plenty of sacrifices without expectations of getting rich. For every LeBron James and Simone Biles, whose last go-round at the Olympics may have evaporated because of the postponement, there are hundreds, maybe thousands of Olympic athletes who use it as fuel. Good facilities and enough time to train is as much as most ask for, and nearly all the reactions that rolled in after Tuesday's announcements were expressions of relief and a promise to double down on effort. "The ground never changes," said David Brown, a Paralympic 100-meter gold medalist at Rio 2016 and the unquestioned fastest blind man on the planet. "They finally canceled, so now what?" he asked, then answered his own question. "Time to grind. This will allow us to train even harder and find the things we were lacking," echoed Jerome Avery, Brown's guide runner and former Olympic sprint hopeful himself. In the next breath, both men concede they've got it relatively good, especially compared to many of their competitors. They train and live at the U.S. Olympic Center in Chula Vista, California, and sponsors like On, a Swiss sportswear manufacturer that backs Brown, helps him cover his other expenses. The one thing that's changed for us in the last couple weeks is we don't run tethered together, Brown said, laughing, you know, social distancing and all. And that was no win game go into overtime. Next in sports, Dayton Double, AP Honors Toppin Grant by Aaron Beard, Associated Press. Obi Toppin and Anthony Grant spent the season transforming Dayton from an unranked team that wasn't even picked to win its conference into one of the nation's best, complete with the most wins in the program's history. The pair behind the Flyers' remarkable rise claimed the Associated Press top individual honors. Toppin is the men's college basketball player of the year, and Grant is the coach of the year. Our team is very appreciative of what we accomplished, Toppin told the AP, just because we made history at our school. Indeed, Dayton, 29-2, went from being picked to finish third in the Atlantic 10 to number 3 in the final top 25 poll, matching the program's best poll finish, first set in 1956. The Flyers went unbeaten in league play and in road games, leaving them positioned to claim a number one seed in the NCAA tournament that was canceled amid concerns about coronavirus pandemic. Now, Dayton has its first winners of the AP's top award, joining St. Joseph in 2004 with Jameer Nelson and coach Phil Martelli as the only programs in the past 40 seasons to claim both in the same year. In the 31 games that we played, our guys did a heck of a job of playing consistent and taking advantage of the opportunities that were in front of us, Grant said. What we did accomplish in the shortened season is something I think will hopefully be remembered. The 6'9", 220-pound Toppin followed his unanimous selection to the AP All-America First Team by appearing on 34 of 65 ballots from top 25 voters who submitted ballots after the cancellation of the NCAA tournament. Iowa junior Luke Garza was second in balloting, earning 24 votes after averaging 23.9 points and 9.8 rebounds for the Hawkeyes. Fellow All-Americans Marcus Howard of Marquette, Peyton Pritchard of Oregon, and Udoka Azubuki of Kansas split the remaining votes. It wasn't that long that Toppin was a 6'2" high school junior who had never dunked in a game, and then a senior lacking any Division I scholarship offers, sending him to prep school before ending up at Dayton. But he blossomed as a redshirt sophomore into an efficient scorer who made regular appearances on TV highlight reels with high-flying dunks. He averaged 20 points and 7.5 rebounds while shooting 63% from the field and 39% from three-point range, leading a season-long surge by the Flyers that rallied a community shaken by devastating tornadoes and a deadly mass shooting in the past year. Dayton grabbed national attention early, taking Kansas to overtime in a loss in the Maui Invitational Championship game. Their only other loss came in December on a buzzer-beating three-pointer in overtime against Colorado. The Flyers had won 20 straight games when the season ended. Honestly, if you had asked me, I swear we could have won a national championship, and our team was so ready to play in the tournament, Toppin said. We were so locked in, but because of this virus, things happen. It's just going to be a what-if for the rest of our lives, but it's something we're going to have to live with. Grant earned 30 of 65 votes to claim the AP Coaching Award in his third season at his alma mater. Baylor Scott Drew, who guided the Bears to a 23-game win streak and 5 weeks at number one, was second with 13 votes. San Diego State Brian Dutcher was third with 12 votes after leading the Aztecs to a 26-0 start, followed by Florida State's Leonard Hamilton, who earned 6 votes after leading the Seminoles to their first-ever Atlantic Coast Conference regular season title. Grant, a former Dayton player, said he had some of the same what-if thoughts as his star player. Still, he prefers to be grateful for a special group that deftly handled the added attention and pressure that came quickly amid the Flyers' steady climb up the rankings. I thought our guys' ability to stay focused on the things they control really told the story of the year, Grant said. I think from the beginning of the year to the end, there was a consistency that our guys played with, which as a coach makes me really proud. And that was Dayton Doubles, AP Honors Toppin Grant. I'm going to go back to some local stories. You're turned into Sun Sounds of Arizona, and we're reading from the Arizona Daily Sun. Lawyers seeking release of nonviolent inmates in Tucson jail by Jacques Ballade, Associated Press. Prosecutors and public defenders were working Tuesday to win the release of an unknown number of nonviolent inmates in a county jail in Tucson to guard against the spread of COVID-19, marking another effort to reduce the state's jail population after 50 inmates were released in northern Arizona. The Office of Pima County Attorney Barbara LaWall was examining a list of 139 felony inmates whose public defenders say should be released from jail, with about 1,850 inmates. LaWall's office was also working towards releasing some inmates charged with misdemeanors. The sheriff in Metro Phoenix, who has the largest local jail population, on Tuesday publicly raised the possibility of getting courts to release some inmates. Officials say 326 COVID cases have been reported in Arizona, resulting in 5 deaths. No confirmed cases have been reported in Arizona jails and prisons, though they are believed to be vulnerable spots for the spread of the coronavirus because inmates with compromised health live in close quarters. The state isn't expected to release inmates from prison for reasons related to COVID-19. We're going to protect public health and public safety, said Patrick Tack, spokesman for Governor Doug Ducey. We're focused on this with our correctional system. We will not be releasing prisoners. For most people, COVID-19 causes only mild to moderate symptoms, such as fever and cough. For some, especially older adults and people with existing health problems, it can cause more severe illnesses, including pneumonia. Last week, 50 inmates were released in Coconino County after Sheriff Jim Driscoll worked with the courts to reduce his jail population. Some sheriffs have urged police agencies to issue citations rather than arrest people. At jails across Arizona, visitation has been suspended. Jail workers are checking to see if people being booked are showing symptoms of COVID-19, and inventories have been taken of gloves, masks, and other supplies. Last week, Maricopa County Sheriff Paul Penzone said he didn't intend on prematurely releasing some of the county's 7,500 inmates without court orders. But on Tuesday, Penzone raised the possibility of getting courts to temporarily suspend the sentence of nonviolent misdemeanor inmates who are allowed to leave jail to go to work. Such inmates pose risks of COVID-19 because they cycle in and out of jails daily. Metro Phoenix jails currently have about 150 inmates who are allowed to leave jails for their jobs, though not all would be expected to be eligible for release because of the types of crime they're accused of committing. Penzone said he is considering other ways to temporarily reduce jail populations if the need arises. We're trying to look at it in phases, Penzone told the Associated Press. Prosecutors in Maricopa County have been working to reduce the number of people entering the jails and courts by balancing the need to immediately charge suspects with the need to protect the public from COVID-19, said Kenneth Vick, chief deputy for Maricopa County Attorney Adele Allister's office. Vick said nonviolent cases that aren't immediately filed will be dealt with at a later date. This is not immunity for crimes, Vick said. We are delaying prosecution. Pima County inmates on the possible release list have been charged with crimes such as personal use drug possession, trafficking in stolen property, shoplifting, and burglaries in which the person was accused of stealing from a relative. Releases won't be available to those accused of committing violence, crimes involving weapons, or sexual assaults. Public defender Joel Feynman said many inmates in question remain in jail because they don't have the money to cover bail, and keeping them there only worsens the risk to inmates in the community. Amelia Kramer, chief deputy in LaWall's office, said she's working to find housing for any released inmates who are homeless. "We are trying to minimize the risk for those individuals and the rest of the community," Kramer said. "Criminal cases will not be dismissed as a result of the effort," Kramer said. The releases, which ultimately must be approved by a judge, were expected to be carried out rapidly. And that was Lawyers Seek Release of Nonviolent Tucson Inmates. Some local briefs. Arizona nonprofits lose estimated $30 million from coronavirus. A survey conducted by the Alliance of Arizona Nonprofits shows that 90% of 364 participating Arizona nonprofits have been or expect to be significantly impacted by the spread of COVID-19 and the related cancellations and restrictions. As of Friday, the total loss of reported revenue was reported at $29.9 million. Just over half the impacted organizations noted a disruption of services, while 83% reported decreased revenue from canceled events, and 60% expressing concern for budgetary implications related to the strains on the national economy. In a media release, Alliance of Arizona Nonprofits CEO Kristen Merrifield said these organizations expect to lose an average 31% of their revenue, up to $10 million for some groups. The April 7 Arizona Gives Day, a 24-hour online fundraising campaign, has given donors the option to contribute to the Emergency Release Fund to assist nonprofits having to cancel critical fundraising events amid COVID-19 health concerns. All funds will be distributed equally among participating nonprofits. The public can also support and champion their favorite nonprofit by creating their own fundraising page by going to the specific organization's profile page at www.azgives.org and click on Create a Fundraiser. The deadline for organizations to sign up to benefit from the fundraiser has been extended to Friday, March 27. Since 2013, Arizona Gives Day has generated $17 million in donation to Arizona nonprofits, with $3.6 million donated in 2019. Early giving is open at www.azgives.org. Next, Coconino receives F for socially distancing based off GPS. Coconino County residents aren't socially distancing to the level of residents in other Arizona counties in response to the coronavirus. That's according to analysts from the company Unicast, which gave Coconino County residents an F rating Tuesday. The company, which tracks GPS data, reviewed what that data showed about who's staying home and who wasn't, primarily by looking at any changes in the number of miles traveled by residents. The data show that between March 1st and March 21st, the number of miles traveled by Coconino residents fell by only 7%. Overall, the state of Arizona received a B rating from the company, seeing about a 34% reduction in the average distance traveled by residents. But most of these reductions occurred in Maricopa, Pima, and Graham counties. Coconino County is far more rural than that of Maricopa and Pima County, which could account for some of the differences. Residents who are traveling for essential goods may still have to travel some distance, and some residents may still be socially distancing while getting outside, for example, hiking. Other counties which received poor marks were Mojave and Navajo County. State extends driving licenses due to viruses. In an effort to reduce the number of Arizonans who need to visit government offices, Governor Doug Ducey issued an executive order last week extending many Arizona driving licenses. Arizonans whose license was set to expire between March 1 and September 1 had their licenses extended 6 months. The Arizona Department of Transportation Motor Vehicle Division also reminds customers that all MVD offices require an appointment. Only services that have been done in person are available. This does not apply to authorized third-party providers. And those were the briefs for today. Finally, the lottery, pick 3, 1, 7, 9, fantasy 5, 18, 28, 34, 37, 39. Triple twist, 14, 18, 19, 33, 37, 38. And the Mega Millions, 2, 8, 16, 18, 31, 14 MB, Mega Plier 2. Thank you for joining us. Listen Tuesday to Friday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 1 p.m. for more news from the Arizona Daily Sun. I'm Megan Warren, wishing you a good night.